Combating Anxiety in Children and Young People. Anxiety and depression are on the rise among young people and are very common. According to the latest Kids Count data book, Maine has the highest rates of reported childhood anxiety in the nation and the third highest rate of childhood depression. What's going on? How is this affecting future generations? And what can we do to combat it? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Experts point to several factors in the surge in youth anxiety, from poverty to school shootings to the rise in social media use. What can parents, teachers, and others in the community do to help young people cope and face uncertainty with resilience? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Anxiety is prevalent throughout our society these days, not only in adults, but in young people as well. A recent report found that Maine children have the highest rate of diagnosed anxiety in the country. Today, we'll talk about why that might be and what can be done to help. Joining me in the studio, Mae LaRue. She is Youth Program Manager for the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Maine, NAMI. Dr. Deb Hagler is a pediatrician based in Brunswick and is Vice President of the American Academy of Pediatrics Maine Chapter. And Scott Hayward is State Executive Director for Pathways of Maine. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you concerned about a young person who might be dealing with anxiety? Do you know of programs or methods that have helped for a young person you know? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I want to start, Dr. Hagler, by talking about the idea of anxiety, because some anxiety is okay, right? I mean, it's a good thing. It's part of evolution that we feel anxious in some situations.
That's right, Jennifer. Anxiety is something that we're all hardwired to have, and it's a good thing, because if we didn't have it, we probably wouldn't have survived as a species. We can see anxiety as early as little babies. You know, you probably remember the first time, say, your seven-month-old was handed maybe to their grandparents, and they were like, wow, I don't recognize this person anymore. So anxiety starts very early on, and it is really, it's a protective trait that we all humans have, and it's also a motivator. You're a little anxious before you take a test, so what do? You study, you prepare. You're a little anxious before a new situation or a scary thing, so you may think twice about doing something. So it's really meant to be there as a protective and survival trait. The problem with anxiety for people is it is a little bit uncomfortable because there are a lot of physical symptoms associated with it. And if it becomes something that starts to control everything you do, then it dictates a lot of your behaviors and it can really impact your life.
So how does a parent gauge the difference between healthy and normal and regular anxiety and the kind of anxiety that may call for getting some help?
So really, kids are supposed to do two main things. They're supposed to get themselves to school, and they're supposed to really start to form social relationships. So when you start to see with your child that their anxiety is really starting to drive how they're able to function in the world, that's something that parents really need to pay attention to. When kids start to miss a lot of school because symptoms of anxiety are starting to percolate through, when kids are having trouble with friends or forming new relationships, when it's really starting to limit what that child's world is doing, that's time to seek some more help. That's time to check in with a medical provider, a therapist in the community. It's time to get some to have a longer conversation about that.
May, part of the reason we're doing this program today is because of the latest Kids Count data book that shows Maine with the highest rate of diagnosed childhood anxiety in the nation. Did that surprise you?
No, I don't think so. From a public health perspective, we know that Maine is an extremely resource poor and rural state. So access to care is a huge issue across the whole state of Maine. And kids today, they're faced with so much pressure, the pressure to be perfect, and the social media, the constant connection that they have through the world. Back when I was in school and I experienced bullying, that ended once I left the school day. Nowadays, kids who experience that, they have it 24/7 because of social media. So kids today just have a complete different way of growing up than people in my age group, and that constant pressure really can be debilitating.
But Maine is not the only resource-poor state in the nation. Is that not going on in other states?
No, it definitely is. And I just think we have a unique ability to come forward and step in and help these kids who are suffering, and normalizing the conversation, I think, is crucial here.
So it may be that we're actually talking about it a little bit more.
Maybe, yep.
Scott, at Pathways, you see young people who have a number of challenges, from autism to having difficult home lives. Are these causes of anxiety, and is this kind of anxiety a different thing to measure and treat than a mainstream kid?
Yeah, it's definitely much of it is driven by anxiety. It's, you know, it all begins as anxiety, and then those things can be exacerbated by, you know, societal factors or your environmental factors.
So it's not that the environment's causing it; it's that the anxiety is made worse.
Yeah, right. Correct. And so, you know, we work in my agency, in my industry, we work with kids who've, you know, experienced a lot of disruption because of their anxiety. And sometimes it is exacerbated by a difficult home environment or chaotic situation at home. And so those are situational and require a little bit different or more intensive approach to treatment sometimes than maybe a teenager who's experiencing a level of anxiety that can be coped with through maybe just seeing a counselor once a week or something like that.
What have you found are effective ways to help young people who are dealing with, you know, challenging life situation and crippling anxiety?
Yeah, so much of what we find to be most effective is actually working with the entire family system and helping to address not just the anxiety that the child experiences, but also the anxiety that the parents experience, and helping them to learn how to model good, healthy coping strategies for their child and integrating that into their everyday and their home environment.
Sure. I'm guessing that anxiety can be multi-generational.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I think that there is a component. We were actually talking about this right before we came in, that, you know, anxiety can most certainly be modeled. You know, the coping strategies for it, be they healthy or not, can be modeled by parents for their children. Children can be like, I think Deb used the term, little radars, you know.
Little radars. Deb May mentioned social media. I know that you are not a supporter of smartphones in the hands of young kids. What is your guidance for your patients?
Oh, so, you know, social media, there's some good things and there's bad things. It really, it can be a powerful educator's tool when it's monitored and it's used appropriately. It can be a powerful tool to connect families. But left alone, just as May was saying, the bullying particularly that can happen to some youth online just won't stop at the end of the school day. So it's really important that parents have some idea of the Pandora's box that is opened when some of the smartphone devices are introduced into a youth's life. And I will say that particularly one distressing thing is that youth will sometimes sleep with their phones and they will be interrupted all night long with text messaging and different alerts from friends. And when you don't sleep, if you have some anxiety underlying, it will definitely increase underlying anxiety. So advice to parents is to really, really set limits with the phones, keep them out of the bedroom, know what your kids are, know who and how your kids are communicating and using social media, and really have a good conversation about what's appropriate to put in place out there on the internet, because things do have a long life online. So it's an important conversation, and it's a conversation to have earlier. I mean, these things are a fact of life for our youth, but understanding the power of that technology and the impact on that child's life is really important.
May, you're here as a representative of NAMI.
Correct.
But you're also somebody who has struggled with anxiety. If you were to talk to a parent today who's worried about their 10-year-old, their 14-year-old, mm-hmm. what would you say to that parent?
Yeah, I would say to normalize the conversation, have open and honest dialogue about what mental health is, what the young person is experiencing, and what that might mean, and then support that young person with the medical provider or mental health professional that they're seeing in having that conversation. I think we live in a society where stigma is very prevalent, and that prevents people from wanting to come out and seek help. But the more that we can normalize that conversation and let people know that they're not alone in what they're struggling with, the better people will be.
I don't know if you all heard it, but just this morning on National Public Radio, there was a story about young people and anxiety and suggesting that a parent's instinct to jump in and help their kid every time they're experiencing anxiety may work against them in the long term. And I'm thinking as a parent, boy, that might have been me, you know? And so how do you guide parents to when it's a good idea to jump in and help and when it's a good idea to stand back?
So I would say...
Go ahead.
Both of you can answer.
Yeah. I would say, to a great extent, trust your instincts as a parent. You know, there is no there's no answer to that question that will fit for everybody. Stay attuned to your child and read the cues that they're giving you about how they're doing and use that as feedback to figure out what's working and what isn't, you know, and as a general rule, I usually say to people, try to do more listening than talking. And when you're working with teenagers, I also recommend that you try to get them in an environment where you're not just sitting down face to face with them, where there's all the pressure of eye contact and everything else. When I was working with kids directly as a counselor, I used to always try to get them in the car. And the car is a great place to have those kind of conversations with your teenagers. And so that's what I typically recommend.
The car is a magical place for wonderful conversations with teenagers. You learn so much by just driving and listening. I would say to parents that it's good for kids to learn to sort of fall down and dust themselves off and get up and try new things. It definitely builds. Kids are so resilient, and you should trust your parental instincts, but you want to give them that chance to try and see that even if they fail, they can recover. It's one reason I really appreciated that my boys played baseball. There's nothing like watching that your heart sinks and you watch your child be really nervous when they're up at bat. But even if they strike out, they have this sense that they're going to recover. They're part of a team. They're going to do it again. There's something about little failures that they can see that they can recover from that really are important for children to sort of grow and become resilient from. If we clear all the bumps and sticks out of the path for them, they're going to have a harder and harder time when inevitably they run up against something more challenging in life, because it's not all smooth sailing.
Joining us on the line now is Olivia McCormack. She's a sophomore at American University and has dealt with significant anxiety since she was younger. Hi, Olivia, and thanks for calling in.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And though you're a sophomore at American University, you're from Maine, correct?
Yes, I am. I'm from Orno.
Share a little bit of your experience. When did you first recognize signs of anxiety in yourself?
So the thing about my anxiety is, like, I can't remember a time in my life where I didn't have it. I didn't always recognize what it was, but I can remember being in kindergarten and they taught us about germs, and they did it in a way so that younger kids could understand it, where there were like little monsters on your hands where you had to wash them off. Which for like most kids like totally worked out fine. But I was like, oh, there's monsters on my hands. So I washed my hands so much until they bled. Mm. And that's when I understood, like, oh, that's not what my classmates are doing, which also can feel really isolating as a younger person, where you realize that the way that you're experiencing the world is different than the way other people are.
How has your own relationship with your anxiety changed over the years as you've gotten older and obviously graduated from high school and thriving in college?
Yeah, so I think that the relationship with anxiety is something that's always changing. The way that I viewed my anxiety at 7 is very different than the way I viewed it at 17. And I think one of the really big things for me was realizing that it was a relationship with anxiety rather than it was something that was done to me. I used to view my anxiety that was something that wasn't really part of myself. It was just like something that I had to deal with, rather than it being like part of who I am and I have to work with it, rather than just ignore it and hope it goes away and hope that no one notices what's going on.
You wrote an essay called Love Letter to My Anxiety. It uses humor to describe what you've gone through. Is that an effective way to deal with anxiety in your view, Olivia?
Well, I think the thing about humor is, so you guys were talking about social media earlier, and I completely understand all of the qualms about it because it can be really detrimental to mental health and especially social media aspects. But there is also like a really big sense of community online with younger people. There's a bunch of like memes and things on Twitter about individuals with anxiety where you can feel just not so alone, where it's like, it's funny, but it's people who have gone through the same experiences that you have. That when I was younger, I was like, I'm the only person who has ever felt this way. Like no one else could understand what's going on, even though I was related to people and I knew other people with anxiety, but I thought that I was the only person going through this specific thing. And kind of that humor aspect just makes it a little, like brings it a little bit more down to earth and helps, and I think can help people like process what's going on and not feel so alone. Because I think that's one of the really big things with anxiety in adolescence is that you already feel kind of alone because like puberty is the worst. And I think that it's bad. It's not a fun time. And I think that going through that with anxiety is just another thing that can make you feel more isolated when it really doesn't have to.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Olivia. That's Olivia McCormack, a sophomore at American University. You know, when Olivia was talking, you all were both just nodding and nodding. May, you when she talked about having a relationship with your anxiety, you agree with that?
Absolutely. When the time that I accepted that anxiety is always going to be a part of me and I can either push it away and try to push it down and not let it be a part of my life versus when I said, you know what, we're in this together. I'm going to work with you and we're going to get through it. That changed my whole relationship with my anxiety. It helped me learn how to be well with this thing that tries to bring me down, but I don't let it because I know how to work with it now.
But I have patients that we have names for the anxiety, and I asked, am I talking to, you know, your named anxiety today or my patient today? And we have whole discussions about their relationship and who's running the show during the visit today and how do we get around this or how do we navigate this conversation? And yeah, a lot of my younger patients will have different coping strategies like that.
Yeah, and I think what we're talking about here is really boils down to awareness and awareness of yourself. And that's a big part of learning to steal a Jedi term, to manage your fear, you know, and that's really what a big part of living with anxiety and coping with anxiety is about, is recognizing that, okay, that little voice that's telling you can't do it, you don't have to listen to that. There's another voice telling you can do it. And it's just there, you know, it's a natural thing that's there to try to protect you. But like anything that protects you, it can go too far. And it's your, you know, it's your job to learn how to manage that.
Well, we do have to go to a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. We're talking about youth and anxiety. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do AARP Maine, working to lower prescription drug costs. Learn more at aarp.org/rx. Sweet Dreams in Brunswick, furnishing the homes of Maine families with American-made and Amish-crafted home furnishings for over 20 years. SweetDreamsFurniture.com. And the Law Offices of Joe Bornstein, a statewide practice representing injured and disabled Mainers since 1974. JoeBornstein.com.
A small Arizona border town has become a magnet for ad hoc militias.
When we do ops, I'll bring my guys in because a lot of places Border Patrol won't go to.
Those groups are testing the local live and let live spirit.
We've had confrontations with them about bringing their guns in here or harassing the people that work here.
That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. You're invited to one of the Maine Public News Tell Me More tour events around the state. As the Maine Public News team travels the state to hear from you, what do you feel are the most important issues in your community? Our first event and community discussion is this Thursday evening, starting at 5:30 at the Maine Public Studios in Lewiston. Maine Public News wants to hear from you in the Lewiston, Auburn, and Androscoggin area. What are the most important issues in your community? And how can Maine Public News best serve you and keep you informed? The Thursday evening Lewiston event also will include reporter Robbie Feinberg speaking about his coverage this week of teen homelessness in Maine. For more information, visit mainepublic.org and click on the banner ad. Hope to see you in Lewiston this coming Thursday evening.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, anxiety and how it affects young people. Joining me, Dr. Deb Hagler, who is a pediatrician and vice president of the American Academy of Pediatrics Maine chapter. Scott Hayward is executive director for Pathways of Maine. And May LaRue is youth program manager for NAMI in Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us now, Chloe Beattie, who is a freshman at the University of Southern Maine and has experienced high levels of anxiety. Thanks for calling in, Chloe.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
How debilitating has your anxiety been for you over the years, and how have you managed to deal with it?
So it actually has started to get worse as I got older. I think the second half of high school, going into college, it actually has gotten so bad where I've had to skip school or work. And so figuring out how to deal with that has been really hard. And I think I'm still learning. but definitely things like calming myself and focusing on my breathing and eating well, and also making sure that people around me are also aware of what I'm going through has been really helpful for me. But it's definitely a work in progress, and some weeks are so much better than others. And then I try to readjust what I've done in the past and see what will help me the next time.
Is college a new opportunity, or is it an opportunity for that anxiety monster to have a new pathway?
I think that the college part of it is really just a new opportunity. And I think it's just that part of me that is experiencing growing up and all the new responsibilities I have. I don't feel like I have a ton of anxiety towards classwork. I think it's more when I just have a lot of things on my plate, like money or living or relationships, and making sure that I keep everything up and good at once is, I think, really what feeds my anxiety the most.
What would you tell the younger you, given what you know now?
I would tell myself that there are things that you can do to make yourself feel better. There have definitely been times that that I felt really hopeless and helpless. Like I couldn't, like there wasn't anything that was going to help me, and then it's just something I was going to struggle with forever. But then I've also experienced a lot of times where I've mastered it and have taken control of it, and that is just such a good feeling. And to tell myself that I can figure out what helps me, it just has been really important.
Well, Chloe, thank you for calling us today. Chloe Beattie, a freshman studying at USM. Chloe said that it got worse as she got older. Is that common?
It certainly can get worse as you get older. You have more life experiences under your belt, and we tend to hold on to negative experiences a little bit better than positive experiences. And when you do that, it can give you more things to worry about. So that certainly can happen to people.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, there's a lot of pressure. There was pressure for this kind of thing when I was younger too, but on today's young people, there's almost the expectation of the Renaissance teenager. And,
yes,
you know, there's a lot of conversation early on about where are you going to go to college? What are you going to do for a living? And, that feels different. Seeing my kids go through that, it feels like it's at a different level than it was at when I was their age. And I think that that probably corresponds with that heightened anxiety as you get older.
I'll go to Abby, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Abby. Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to call in to add to the conversation that I'm a school psychologist, and so I'm affiliated with, currently right now, I'm affiliated with several different schools, so I'm not going to give the name of a school, but I wanted to remind folks that school psychologists often can be sort of a frontline person and also serve as a person that's a go-between. For instance, if a student is receiving counseling outside of the school, we can be sort of a person to either check in with or to work through things that are happening in the school system on a daily basis or on a weekly basis. School psychologists have training in both group counseling and individual counseling. Often school psychologists are identified as just people who do assessments and work with kids with learning disabilities, but actually we work with all kids in schools. So I just wanted to throw that out to people who are listening as another resource, a parent who doesn't know what to do, that they may contact their school psychologist in their building.
Abby, thank you so much for calling in. I need to ask you, though, do most schools in Maine have a school psychologist?
Some of the smaller systems don't have one as an employee, as in, you know, they're there every single day. But all systems have at least a school psychologist with whom that they contract with. So the person is accessible, perhaps, though, a parent needs to talk with either the principal or a guidance counselor to access the school psychologist.
Thanks so much for calling. We have a tweet from Marfine. LGBTQ and kids of color are particularly vulnerable to anxiety. As someone who dealt with anxiety coming out and growing up with internalized racism, I found creative expression in arts, reading, writing, playing music, important in addition to talking. More nodding in this room.
Yeah, I actually have in my notes a point about that to, you know, try to help parents with another technique that they can use to help their kids cope with anxiety. And that is, every child that I've ever worked with had sort of a natural artistic ability. And I think that if that's something that you can identify with your child and really help support that, that can be a great source of self-confidence for a child. And, you know, it's something, it's also a great source of expression. And I think that's something that can really help the, you know, learning how to manage the anxiety and cope with it.
How about keeping a journal?
Yeah, for some people, writing is that artistic ability, and absolutely journaling can be really, really helpful.
And back to that discussion about the relationship with anxiety, I think a large part of growing that relationship is finding what works for you when that anxiety is really high. For some people, it's yoga and meditation. For other people, it's therapy and medication and exercise and sleeping enough hours at night. Whatever works for you to cope is great. Just you have to put the work in to find that technique that works for you.
We'll go to Emmanuel, who's calling from Waterville. Hi, Emmanuel. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I think the show is great, and I called in because I started a program at the Maine Academy of Natural Sciences called the Threshold Program a couple of years ago, and it's a home visiting program where we send our teachers out to teach and learn with the students that aren't coming to school. So we're dealing with a population of students that aren't getting to school enough or have already dropped out. And we sort of expected there to be a, you know, the primary group we'd be serving would be teen parents, because there's lots of barriers for those kids in getting to school. And what we found in the first year was that almost 60% of the 20 students that we had either self-diagnosed or were diagnosed with social anxiety, and that was a real kind of a surprise to us. And it was a really, you know, key figure in why they weren't coming to school. It was their discomfort in being around people, and in particular, in being around peers. So we're in our second year now, and we've been learning a little bit more, you know, about what works and what doesn't work with those students.
Emmanuel, thanks for calling in. The Threshold is the name of the program.
Yes, it's called the Threshold Program, and it's part of the Maine Academy of Natural Sciences. And I think that one of the things that really has come across is that when the teacher and the student can make a real connection, then that enables, you know, their education to continue and then you can kind of widen their scope by taking them out into the community and doing some of the things that they were fearful about prior to, you know, prior to that teacher arriving on the scene. But then there are students that, you know, won't answer the door when the teacher comes to knock. So, you know, it's certainly not 100% successful, but I'd say that about 75% of the students are making progress both in their academics and getting a little bit more comfortable, you know, with people that they don't know or in social situations. And just one other observation I have about social anxiety, which doesn't lead to any direct, you know, cures, is kind of the canary in the coal mine idea that our kids are picking up a generalized anxiety that we experience throughout our society right now with things so polarized and all the other, you know, sort of mega trends that are going on, that the kids who have, you know, are most vulnerable to that are going to pick it up and act it out. So I guess I would leave that comment for, you know, your guest too.
Yeah, Emmanuel, thank you so much. And this is related to what you were saying before, Deb, isn't it? The kids sort of being the radar.
Yeah, kids really sense what's going on with the adults. I mean, from a very early age, they pick up on what's going on with the adult community. And, you know, a lot of learning is modeling. And so they see how we treat each other. They see how we behave in certain situations. So they, when you're a really anxious adult, your child will see that. So I think they're picking up on a lot of cues all around us of some certain societal dysfunction that we are all talking about and discussing in various platforms right now. I mean, the good thing is kids are entirely resilient. And I have to say, adolescents are really passionate once you can help them find their thing. And it's really interesting to hear this gentleman talk about connecting them to an adult that really cares is really so important for a lot of issues with adolescent mental health. And it's so powerful and healing for adolescents that's so important.
And we know that one of the most strongest protective factors against poor outcomes for youth is having that young person being connected to at least one trusted adult in their life. And for some youth, that trusted adult is a parent. But for many other youth, that trusted adult is at school. It's their teacher. It's the school resource officer. It's the guidance counselor at school. So really fostering that relationship and making sure that every youth does have that at least one trusted adult is crucial.
And May, something else Emmanuel said reminded me of something we were talking about during the break is Emmanuel went out and found out that many of these kids had anxiety. And it sounds to me as though maybe it wasn't apparent in the beginning that was what was going on. And possibly because they're all different symptoms.
Yeah, there's a lot of physical ramifications of anxiety. For me personally, I had a lot of gastrointestinal issues to the point where my family couldn't even go out to dinner together without the fear of my stomach, you know, freaking out and me being in the bathroom sick. So I think being in tune to the physical components of anxiety is super important. Even to this day, when my anxiety is really high, I literally feel like I need to crawl out of my skin. That's how uncomfortable it is. So being aware of those physical symptoms is key.
And you said some kids that may have behavior problems may be diagnosed as the kids who act out are experiencing anxiety.
Right. We need to get to what's the underlying thing there. Let's open the conversation and find out what's really going on deeper to really treat the underlying issue.
And Scott, is this what's going on with some of the kids you work with?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of what we, going back to the discussion about awareness a little while ago, a lot of what we do, especially when we're working with teenagers, is really help them draw a link between the process in their mind and the chaotic process that anxiety creates in their mind and their behavior that's expressed when they're having those thoughts and feelings. And much of the time, the behaviors that they're exhibiting, they're not fully aware of. And there's not a really good biological connection in our brain to help us recognize why we do some of the behaviors we do. And as a counselor, you know, you can help make those links for those folks. And it really helps them to manage those things better.
Emmanuel, thanks so much for your call. We'll move up to Southwest Harbor and Denise. Hi, Denise. Go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm curious as to the differences that may have been noted between Maine and other states that have a high rate of anxiety for teenagers and what the states are that have lower rates. And is the difference
between the higher states like Maine and the lower states a significant difference, a minor difference, not knowing what the numbers were. And I'm just curious about how, what might look in the big picture different from one state to another. And another thing, when your panelist just mentioned physical symptoms of her anxiety, one of my children has celiac disease and is sensitive to other types of food as well. And diet can have a really big impact on people's ability to cope and can have create issues. And is that something that practitioners take into consideration?
Go ahead.
Oh, I would say absolutely. So a lot of anxiety shows up in the pediatrician's office with belly aches. And so making sure that we are attuned to that, we evaluate that appropriately, talk to families about healthy diet, make sure that there is no medical diagnosis that's driving that those belly aches, like celiac. And talking to families about GI distress makes people really uncomfortable. And that in of itself can make people feel anxious. So it's anxiety, again, is a warning system. So it is part of the package. And doing the basics of sleeping well, eating a healthy diet, trying to get exercise are part of good care that can help mitigate some of the underlying symptoms of anxiety for anyone. And this is important for kids as well.
And research shows that 80% of our serotonin is created in the gut. So the phrase, you are what you eat, actually is probably very true.
Well, and I'm looking right now through the Kids Count data book to try to see how we compare with the nation. And obviously, I can't find it quickly enough. Is there a possibility, though, that, you know, it's just that we're better at diagnosing it here in Maine, that, you know, it's a pretty rotten problem everywhere?
You know, we were having this discussion before the show because I was trying to figure out how the data is collected. And there's a lot of national surveys that this dives down in. Some are done by interviews, some are done by survey. And we all know that there's an issue with kids and anxiety. And it's hard to compare one survey method to another, how they're making the diagnosis. If you look at academic centers, they use really strict criteria. If you're asking somebody the question, do you have anxiety? Everybody has anxiety. How are they defining their term? So it is a little bit unclear how that's collected. So we were trying to figure that out ourselves. But and if there's anything that we can say, exactly what the caller had asked, if there's something about Maine in and of itself that is unique, but I don't know that they're really.
And I maybe found the numbers climate. Here. The yeah. state percentage, the state percentage for Maine, according to the Kids Count data book, is 16.1%. This is children diagnosed with anxiety problems, ages 3 to 17, and the national percentage 8.2%. So again, not a lot of detail about how these are collected, but about twice as high as the national average. So, yeah. Denise, it's a good question. Thanks for calling. We are going to do another quick break. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine.
The problem of youth homelessness in Maine may reveal itself as teens or families seeking help at shelters. But in rural Maine, the private lives of these students and families are often hidden from view.
I can't imagine how many kids like that we miss who walk silently with their stories and how we don't know what's going on with them.
We'll hear some of those stories in our series Finding a Way, running this week on Morning Edition and All Things Considered, and at mainepublic.org.
Coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, we'll have ideas from the CBC. Today, Stealing Home, Jackie Robinson, a look back on the 100th anniversary of his birth. The National Baseball Hall of Fame quotes trailblazer Jackie Robinson, "A life is not important except in the impact it has on other lives." Robinson's life had a huge impact, especially when he broke down the color barrier in Major League Baseball and American society. His rookie season still stands as one of the most politically profound events in the history of organized sports. Every April 15th, every team in the major leagues celebrates Jackie Robinson Day, and 2019, this year, is the centennial of his birth. We'll hear about Jackie Robinson on Ideas from the CBC at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Young People and Anxiety. Joining us today, Scott Hayward with Pathways of Maine, May LaRue with NAMI Maine, and Deb Hagler with the American Academy of Pediatrics Maine Chapter. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. One thing we haven't really talked much about late during this program yet, although we did have a call from a school psychologist, is resources. Okay, so your kid has anxiety and the pediatrician, Deb, recommends some counseling. There aren't a lot of child psychologists in Maine, and it's hard to find a match for your kid.
So there are some, and what is recommended is that families look for somebody that can do cognitive behavioral therapy with their child. This has been shown to be very effective in most studies. Your local family doctor or pediatrician usually has a resource list of people that can help. As May was saying, there's usually a wait to get in. In the meantime, there are some resources online that parents can use. I will send people to the Child Mind Institute or the Clay Center for Young and Healthy Minds at Mass General, and the Society for Clinical and Adolescent Psychology has a nice website of effective child therapy. And then sometimes there's some nice books that parents can use. And I have one for younger children that I love called What to Do When You Worry Too Much by a psychologist from New Hampshire, Don Huebner. So there are some things that you can do. And again, paying attention to sleep, which often actually can be very interrupted with children with anxiety disorders. But doing what you can to help your child sleep, doing things with exercise, paying attention to a healthy diet. And I will say watching out for energy drinks. So a lot of caffeine, a lot of Red Bull, those things can make people a little bit more anxious and make that feeling worse. So paying attention to things like that for your children can be helpful. And making sure that younger children, particularly, I've seen some young kids come in that were really anxious that watched some really scary movies and were consuming some media that may have been inappropriate for their age. So paying attention to those things can help. But both of my colleagues here work at organizations that have very well-trained professionals that help do the type of therapies we know are effective.
Yeah, we are across the state and we do what we can. I think, for families that live in the rural parts of the state, then there's even fewer resources for them and makes finding help for their child a little more challenging. I think, one of the things that I would recommend to people is many people at their job, there's an employee assistance program. And if you are working, if you have a child at home who's experiencing debilitating levels of anxiety, you may not only be able to learn some things about yourself and how you may actually be modeling some of that without realizing it, but also learn some techniques that you can also use with your child to help them too. And that's a resource that's fairly readily available. Much of it can be done over the phone. I think finding somebody, I think Deb mentioned earlier, during the break, finding somebody who is a good match for your child is really important as well. And if there isn't a counselor available, I know when I was a child, our guidance counselor at my school was really helpful and still a great guy. I see him at basketball games every now and then. And, I think there are caring adults in the schools that can be helpful as well.
May? Yeah, and at NAMI Maine, we operate what's called the Helpline, and it's a resource and referral line. So the phone number for that is just simply 800-464-5767, and we have a wonderful gentleman who answers that phone and can connect you to resources in your area of the state, wherever that may be, from Aroostook County all the way down to York County. So we provide support for any Mainer impacted by mental illness and suicide, no matter where you are. So contacting our Helpline is a great way to find out your local resources. We also offer a wide range of training programs and education classes that can really help families who might be struggling.
Sure, and I've been taking notes, so I'll pass these resources on to our Facebook page and our web page. We're going to go to Tony calling from Bar Harbor. Hi, Tony. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for this show. It's really important. I have had anxiety for most of my life, and one of the great things, you know, I had anxiety, but you were talking about the relationship with anxiety, and I've grown to know that anxiety can actually teach you a lot about your life and teach you how to live your life actually without fear. And one thing, though, I've had trouble with is that it secludes you also. You kind of feel like you're apart from other people. And one thing was that I felt like I was alone and felt like there's nobody else out there feeling like I was for the longest time. So I think awareness is really important. Shows like this are really important. Talking to everyone around you, because like you were saying, so many more people have this problem, and it's something that can be fixed, something that can be helped. There's so many more resources out there, and we just need to reach out. Kids, adults, whoever you are, there's always a resource out there. There's always hope out there. So, you know, I think there's always someone in your life that can help you. And I think, you know, more discussion, more talking is always the answer. And I just, you know, wanted to applaud you and applaud everyone who reaches out to your friend and family. It's really important.
Thank you so much for calling in, Tony, and beautifully said. Everybody here in the studio is nodding as you spoke. We'll go to David, who's calling from Portland. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to share my experience as a youth getting misdiagnosed. I had severe anxiety. I got picked on. I got my head put in a toilet. I had all of the reasons to have anxiety. But I also was experimenting with drugs and alcohol and wasn't honest with my doctors. I got put into a research program called the PEER program, which is for early detection of schizophrenia and bipolar, and was immediately put on lithium, Seroquel, Risperidol, and a litany of other drugs. This experience really messed up my life. Since then, I've been cleared of bipolar and schizophrenia. I still have anxiety. But I just want to share this cautionary tale for all, you know, that to be, you know, really cognizant of, you know, that children are scared to tell the truth about their situation, and that misdiagnosing them can have severe consequences. Thank you.
David, thank you for calling. I'm sure, brave of you to call. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, very brave. And I think, you know, that's something that, so I'm a licensed clinician, and it's probably one of the things that, yeah, if there was ever a part of my job that I lost sleep over, it was that, and making sure that, you know, that what I was doing was correct, and taking the time to make sure that I knew the people that I worked with and understood them, the whole person, and not just a part of that person. And I think, you know, it's true that there are medications that can be helpful for anxiety or any diagnosis. I'm a firm believer that it's rarely the whole answer, and that, you know, it's important to be able to have some behavioral means to manage your struggles as well as pharmacological.
David, thank you for your call. We're going to go to Liam, who's calling from Southwest Harbor. Hi, Liam. Go ahead. Liam, are you there? Okay, I'm sorry about that. We'll move on. We'll go to Aaron calling from Bangor. Hi, Aaron. Go ahead.
Hi. I have two boys. One of them has been diagnosed with anxiety. And one of the things that I think we haven't really touched on is that anxiety really presents itself in extraordinarily different ways for different people. My eldest child, who has officially been diagnosed, nobody would have believed that he had anxiety because he is gregarious and outgoing, and his coping skills are absolutely amazing. And when we finally figured out what was going on, and he actually ended up in a program that's an alternative education program, like was mentioned on here before, his anxiety was addressed, and he is able to learn in ways in leaps and bounds that I never thought he would have. But without that one person who listened to what we were saying and trying to figure out, you know, what exactly was going on, we wouldn't have had a clue that it was anxiety that was really stopping him from being able to cope with the world.
Erin, thanks for your call. Go ahead, Deb.
I was going to say, it really can be a tricky diagnosis to make. Kids sometimes, it can masquerade as all sorts of different behaviors. And there's still a significant amount of stigma about the idea of even having a mental health problem that makes it so hard for everyone to address. So it takes patience. It takes a really trusting relationship. A lot of this is a discussion, and most of the criteria are a checklist of symptoms, and you have to feel comfortable with the people. You have to take time often to go through lots of different situations to really understand what is going on with that individual to come to a conclusion and feel comfortable with your diagnosis. And sometimes it takes several visits to figure something out. It's not a snap decision. So it takes some patience and being persistent and really trusting the team to come up with a diagnosis.
Erin, thanks so much. Go ahead, May.
And I think at the root of all of this is we just need to foster environments where kids know that it's okay to struggle and it's okay to be open and honest about those struggles. They're not alone. And there's nothing wrong with them for what they're dealing with. And that
sure,
hope and help are available.
Sure, because isn't there sometimes anxiety about having the anxiety?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
And feeling like there's something wrong with me and what's wrong with me for feeling this way.
Yeah, I suffered in silence for 10 years because I thought there was something inherently wrong with me for the fact that I stayed up at night shaking in my bed because I was so nervous about all of these different factors. If I knew that other kids also experienced that, and I knew that back then, I think I would have found healing way sooner than I did. I needed to know that I was not alone, and I didn't know that until way later.
I think so many of the other callers have expressed this isolation that they feel that they're the only ones, and that having the discussion helps end some of that stigma, and that makes it easier to talk about it and to seek appropriate care, and that it's something that can be addressed. Mm-hmm. People can go on and function and name their anxiety and work with it over the course of, you know, their growing up time and engage again. But feeling like you're all alone, that you're the only kid that's having this problem, mm-hmm. is further isolating and further shaming to that individual and makes it so much harder, especially for a young child that just doesn't even know. They really feel like maybe they've done something wrong.
Yeah. And I would say that isolation is probably one of the greatest barriers for them to, you know, to heal as well. And that, that's why shows like this are so important, so that people can hear that there are so many people out there that are struggling with, maybe they're not exhibiting the same symptoms as everyone else, but that it's that same anxiety that they're feeling, and they're not alone in that.
Well, it is an important conversation, and I apologize to all of you we were not able to get to on this hour. It seems as though we need several hours to talk about this subject. It's such a prevalent and sad problem, and talking about it, as you said, May, is the first step. And that is May LaRue, our guest here, Youth Program Manager for NAMI Maine, Dr. Deb Hagler, a pediatrician and vice president of the Maine chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and Scott Hayward, Executive Director for Pathways of Maine. Thank you all for being here. Nikki Shields ran the board. Isaac Merson took your calls. Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn produced the program. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Public Radio.